Welcome to Swine Times Podcast. Glad you're here with us today. As our guest, I have Dr. Beth Thompson. Beth Thompson is a state veterinarian here in Minnesota. She's also, Beth, I think you were a year or two behind me in vet school. I'm trying to think of exactly when you graduated related to that, but you and I were at school about the same time. I also know you have a law degree, and so you have a lot of skills that would lend themselves well, I think, to you in your current role as state vet. So that's your introduction. I probably butchered it. Can you take it from there and kind of explain, you know, your background a little bit, what you do now, anything that might help the audience kind of know where you're coming from?
Sure thing. And thank you, Dr. Wayne Spencer. The whole lawyer thing didn't need to be brought up. I like to say that I'm a recovering lawyer. It's something that you train your brain a certain way, and then you move into veterinary medicine and you have to retrain your brain again. But yes, you and I crossed paths first when I was in vet school. I've been with the Board of Animal Health now since 2008, and I've been in the role of state veterinarian since 2016.
Yeah. Hey, one other thing is I didn't mention, you were a practicing vet for a few years there between school and state vet. So you're not a government fixture. You are actually a practicing vet who had seen some action out in the field. That's correct.
Yes, it is. And I like to say that if I do end up retiring right around age 65, half of my career would have been in private practice, and then half with public. So I'm trying to be on both sides of that question.
Okay, good. Well, I thought of you a few weeks ago when we were tossing around ideas for the podcast and who would be good to hear from. And again, we're looking just for opinions and impressions and thoughts and just really maybe a softer edge on what the opposite side would be, policies. You know, what do we do for policies? Just how you approach things. And the topic would be, you know, African swine fever. You know, we had that event globally. Now it seems like it's far in the background of our mind at this point. But then we had the advent of COVID. And so, you know, I guess first, what do you think, Beth? We were already kind of ramped up for African swine fever preparedness in the U.S. We were on guard. We were thinking about ways to prevent it. We were looking at import strategies to be safer about it. We were looking at ways to mitigate risks in the feed. We were looking at a lot of things, adding beagles to airports. And then COVID-19 comes up, and it's, I don't know if that's made it worse or better. I guess that'd be the question I got for you is, how do those two things relate, COVID-19 and African swine fever preparedness? Are we at worse risk now, same risk, better? Where are we at for that?
Right. And who was the famous person, Spencer, that said, you know, you're only as strong as your weakest link? I've got some battle scars from 2015 and living through highly pathogenic avian influenza. That was an incursion of a foreign animal disease into Minnesota, into the Midwest. There were other areas of the country that were affected by it, but it turns into almost a surreal lifestyle. And certainly I think all members of the public are going through that right now with COVID-19. To your question, yeah, you know, we were working, we were going down a good path, and I hope to pick up that path again, working on African swine fever and preparedness for that. But certainly COVID has taken us off, although, and I think we can get into this a little bit more. I think we've learned some really good messages and things that we can be doing, especially with the processing plants, that we can apply back to an animal disease situation. But yeah, COVID has taken everybody, whether it's the local governments, the state governments, people out in rural Minnesota, certainly people in the Twin Cities area in Minnesota, down a different path. And for example, I have not worked in the office now for over 2 months. All of our staff are teleworking, and that sets up a whole different idea of how you communicate with people. I'm usually out in the field, either talking with producers or veterinarians or attending meetings or traveling throughout the U.S. with other state animal health officials, and that's come to a complete standstill. So I think we're learning things from this whole situation, Spencer, but I'm looking forward to getting back to a little bit what, 85% of normal, whatever that's going to be, right?
Yeah, I think we all are. On all my end, it's wearing really thin at this point of any patients I have for the lockdown. But hey, I'm curious about what you said. We could learn some things from the plants, from the packing plants, and how they've done things. Is that, can you expand on that a little bit? What do you mean by that?
Yeah, sure thing. The we saw Smithfield in Sioux Falls was the first plant in the Midwest that really affected where our producers, our hog producers, take their pigs. And then, of course, JBS. And now we're working through Hormel. There have been plants in other areas of the country that have also experienced either slowdowns or shutdowns. It occurred to me one day that if we do see African swine fever, a diagnosis of that, or any other foreign animal disease for that matter, affecting hogs in the United States, what's most likely going to happen first is that our trading partners are going to shut down trade. And it's my understanding, you probably know this better than I do, but it's my understanding that 25 to 30% somewhere in there of our hogs, that product goes internationally. So if we truly do see, if we see that however short of time period it might be, but we lose that 25 to 30%, I think the fact that we've seen our processors shut down and cut back a certain percentage, we're learning some good lessons about how to deal with that right now, that hopefully we can carry those lessons forward and remember that if and when, God forbid, it does actually happen to us.
Yeah. You know, that's so funny you say that, because as this COVID thing has happened, and who would have ever guessed that it would have shut plants down and it would have screwed up the entire chain of supply for pork the way it did. I would never have guessed that when we first heard COVID. But as it got into it and we started watching the plant shutdown occur and we started having to face the possibility of euthanizing, you know, growing pigs, every one of us said, well, this is exactly what we were preparing for with ASF was, you know, how do we do this in the event of African swine fever or hog cholera or any of those things? We'd be in a similar situation, maybe not on such a broad mass scale, but at least at some local levels of going in and euthanizing maybe large numbers of pigs. So it's almost like it was a test run for that, a terrible test run, but some related test run, nonetheless, were showed us how we might have to do it. So that's interesting. I think it's very true. Hey, I got a question for you, Beth, about just where pigs go now. And it's been bugging me, and I don't know what you think about it and how much you think it's a problem, but as this has happened, a lot of pigs end up getting sold out of the backs of barns. You know, as farmers can't sell their pigs to the traditional marketplace, to the plants, they might sell 50 to 100 pigs out of a finisher to get the finisher emptied out, and because they couldn't get a load to the packer. And so there's, I think, a significant number of pigs that are getting sold out of the backs of barns, oftentimes for cash with no documentation, just because it's salvaging some value out of the barn. You know, it's a very local thing sometimes, but sometimes these pigs are going long distances, and sometimes they aren't killed immediately. Sometimes they're, I think, being raised out because they were cheap to buy, and the guy might put them in the back of a shed and feed them. And I'm thinking maybe he feeds them garbage. Yeah, I don't know what the possibilities are, but immediately in my mind, I'm starting to have a vision of an increased risk for African swine fever. And I'm thinking, am I a conspiracy theory guy? Is that truly possible? Or is this me being overly, overly cautious or overly concerned, I guess, is the best way to say it. Am I off or am I on that? How would you think about it?
Yeah, that's probably a good concern for a swine veterinarian in Minnesota to have, right? My concern doesn't rise probably to the level of those pigs contracting African swine fever. My first concern is, you know, those folks that are driving those pigs out to our rural areas. First of all, we all know that slaughtering a hog is not the same as what our deer hunters do in the fall of every year. It's a very different animal. It's a very different process. So somebody who thinks that they can butcher a deer after it's been hunted and they can just do the same to a hog, it is different. But over and above that, and you brought it up, the fact that they're putting these pigs outside, and I honestly don't think there are a lot of people that understand how strong and how secure you need to have your fences or your building. What I'm really concerned about is that we're going to have a feral hog population that's going to pop up in Minnesota. Now, we can say that we don't have that now, but if there are enough people taking these hogs home, and they're big hogs, right? I mean, they're 340, 360, maybe even bigger. It doesn't take much for that size of hog to either break through a building or get under a fence. So that's my concern. But yeah, to your point too, yep, they could start picking up some of these diseases. And we know that we have some brucellosis and pseudorabies in our feral hog population in the southern U.S.
Yes.
So yeah, definitely a concern.
Yeah, I think Minnesota is one of the few states that doesn't have an established wild pig population that's generationally continuing. I had the same exact thoughts. Like, this would be the year where the coyotes are going to be well fed from poorly processed hogs that are bought from farmers directly and then thrown into a ditch. And it'll also be the year where we got a feral pig population, because some of these pigs are just going to get out, or the guy will get tired of feeding them or holding them and say, well, here you go. And he'll turn them loose, and we will have a population of wild pigs, would be my guess. So
right.
I don't know, but those are my exact same concerns. So when you think about food safety, Beth, and I think I know the answer to this, but I know it's come up when I've talked to people, and maybe to get it from your mouth for folks to hear would ease some concerns. But COVID is not a swine pathogen. So the fact that maybe there's plant workers that have COVID-19 at the packing plant, is that any cause for concern of, well, maybe contamination of the meat, or that somehow pigs can get it and actually circulate it amongst the pig populations? People tend to get wrapped up in pigs and people getting the same disease, which sometimes, but maybe not in this case. Can you clarify that?
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head. It's not a food safety concern. And, you know, workers in our hog barns, there's no good research showing us that workers can give the virus to the pigs. So, yeah, you're exactly right on those two points, Spencer.
Okay. And one other thought I'd like to get you to comment on. COVID impacted everything because it shut the plants down, at least everything in the swine production. And we never would have thought that we would have had a pile of pigs building up as it is being built up today, and still growing, in fact. It's not getting smaller yet. And so we've got several million pigs walking around that should be pork that are still in barns. And we're hitting the point, we've been into it for a little while already, of euthanizing weaned pigs, but fat hogs. If you can imagine, you know, euthanizing an entire barn of 320, 330 pound pigs, because they've got no more value and there's no place for them to go, and there's no way to process them anywhere. In that case, we got mass euthanasia efforts that are occurring. Any commentary on that? Just like, how should producers or anybody in this audience listening think about that? Is there anything we need to kind of step back from and just appreciate about the situation that should add to our thoughts as we approach this?
Yeah, and a couple of thoughts there. First of all, you know, this isn't a animal disease issue. So at least in Minnesota, the Board of Animal Health initially had very little to do with, you know, these growing concerns of hogs that are not going through the processing process as they need to be. But it became very clear that the board needed to be involved, at least on a coordination level. And I would say on a federal level, USDA needed to be involved to help coordinate what was going on out in the field. Now, we've got a lot of really great producers, veterinarians here, you know, both in the Midwest and in our neighboring states throughout the Midwest. But it, you know, the concern became, what are these folks doing if they don't have, you know, that veterinarian oversight on good depopulation or euthanasia methods? What are they going to do if they don't have a good place for disposal of the carcasses? All of that really came to a head probably about 6 to 8 weeks ago. So I have to, you know, kudos to the folks, the systems and the veterinarians and everybody involved here in the state of Minnesota for all of the work that they did. And I'll go back to my prior statement, you know, I hate to call COVID-19 a silver lining, but I think, and we're working on this now, I
think if we start capturing all of the different ideas and processes that we went through in the last 2 months with these processing plants, we're going to have a good back end on that African swine fever response plan.
Right. What did you refer to, or what were you referring to when you said we met that situation 6 to 8 weeks ago? Were you talking about just the fact of having to euthanize pigs, or what were you referring to with what got developed 6 to 8 weeks ago?
Oh, that was about the time, and I'm on COVID time right now. That was probably about the time that the Smithfield closure really started hitting Minnesota, in addition to, you know, JBS.
Oh,
all of
sure.
those slowdowns. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, okay. So just the backlog began then, where all of a sudden farmers were stuck in a situation where they literally couldn't move pigs and were being faced with this. Okay.
Right.
All right. Trying to think of anything else related to COVID and pig production. Beth, have you got anything we didn't cover here? Something that's been in the back of your mind? Maybe just advice for producers or just producers or society at large when they look at the situation with pigs, which is pretty dramatic right now with this huge backlog of fat hogs and COVID and the value of pork in the grocery store and the value of your pig in the barn and mass euthanasia and feral hog potential and all these things. Is there anything that we didn't cover that you think we should?
You know, I think the one thing that is so important for all of us coming out of this situation is, you know, I consider going back to, you know, January and before that, my communication and the quality of my relationships with, whether it's the swine vets here in Minnesota or the producers or, you know, the Minnesota Pork Board, those national entities, all of that was good. I thought it was really good. But having gone through this and we had a ongoing 8 o'clock in the morning phone call with Minnesota and a number of other hog producing states for a period of, 4 to 5 weeks. I think our relationships are much stronger, and it's too bad that you have to go through something like this to make those relationships and that communication better. But I think we identified some, and it was raw conversation, Spencer, on a couple of those phone calls. I mean, it was let's throw everything into the fire and see what happens sort of conversation. So again,
okay.
Silver lining. I sure hope so.
Yeah, I think looking for silver linings, that is one. I don't even think, just as a little subset of that, at the practical level of being in the barn and working with producers, how do you euthanize 1,000 pigs? We have a much, much better understanding of how efficient or practical those methods are now, having tried several. And this, is this what? What about this? How would you do this? And we've actually had to go through them. There's a wake of destruction behind all this, but there's some real learning that went on amongst farmers across the country, I think, and veterinarians that work with them. So yeah, silver lining there.
Right.
And when the pile is finally cleared up and we're back to something what we remember as a previous life of normal production, those lessons will hopefully still be there. Anyway, good enough on that. I really appreciate you being on the phone. Thanks for your comments. Thanks for your thoughts. Thanks for being open to doing this. I know you spent a lot of time talking to people, and you're probably tired of talking about this, but I appreciate you spending some time here with us today.
Sure thing.
All right.
Sure
thing. Yeah, thanks, Beth. And I want to invite all the listeners to tune in to the next episode of Swine Time Podcast, whenever that is. Thank you.